More of Life Effect Now. I'm Mitch Teich. If you thought the celebrity publicity machine was a modern-day phenomenon, think again. Years before the artistic pictures of John and Yoko, centuries before the People magazine photo spreads, celebrities turned to painters to put their likeness before an adoring public. And in the 19th century, one of the leading painters of well-known Americans from the theater and of celebrities from around the world was Thomas Sully. A retrospective of Sully's work has just opened at the Milwaukee Art Museum. It's curated by William Rudolph and Carol Eaton Soltis, who are with us in the studio to talk more about the painter. Welcome to Lake Effect.
It's a pleasure.
Yes.
Is it oversimplifying things to refer to Thomas Sully as something of a celebrity artist?
Not at all, because he painted so many famous people from the 19th century. You know, presidents, queens, young Queen Victoria, before she became who everyone recognizes now when she was girlish and very pretty. And just, you know, international and national famous Americans.
He became a go-to artist for much of the 19th century. Mm-hmm. He was the leading artist in Philadelphia after the earlier generation had passed on. Mm-hmm. And he was an artist whom people would seek out when they would travel to the Middle Atlantic. We have a portrait in the show of the wife of a sugar planter from New Orleans and her three oldest daughters who came to Philadelphia, and they made it a point to have Sully paint their portraits. So yes, in the world of portrait painters, he definitely was a famous one and one that you would want to make you look
beautiful.
They knew
they would get something different, which is part of what the thesis of our show is about, painted performance, that he gave these very lively portraits. And while they were suave and beautiful and refined, they were also full of human interest, so that, like the Rob portrait you're speaking about, you know, you'd have all these details of how the child and the children and the mother were interacting. And so you could be delighted by it as well as just look at this beautiful elite sort of thing.
And how much of his approach to subjects like that was informed by his own early history as coming from a family of performers?
We argue that it is absolutely the key. It is the thing that informs the way that Sully looks at the world and the way he puts pictures together, that he intuitively, keenly, natively understood from earliest childhood, watching people who played parts for a living, that in a 21st century way, as we would say in graduate school, identity is not fixed. Sully understood this.
Right. And he allowed people to take on different roles and assume different postures and relate to the viewer. And I think that's one of the things that's very exciting about the portraits that we are showing and the fancy pieces is they sort of reach out to the viewer. It makes you think about who is this person? They're not just static. He also creates a very beautiful environment for his people to be in because they're coloristic and full of, you know, movement of light and shadow. And they're beautiful things.
There is an image, and I'm not even certain that it's part of this exhibit, but it's in the collection in this book. I was reading the book of all places on the bus yesterday, and I think it's of the McEwen sisters.
That's not in the show, but it's not dissimilar to the type of works that he created. And basically what you're referring to is there are wonderful, beautiful people in the foreground with active postures. And then there's an interesting effect in the background,
yeah.
And that comes from the theater. So in other words, it's as if Sully puts people on the apron of a stage and but is aware that upstage in the background there's bits of business going on with extras. And when you come to the show, you'll see that in a painting we have, a study for a portrait of the Marquis de Lafayette painted in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You'll also see that in a big subject picture of Cinderella at the kitchen fire from 1843. He's very much attuned to the kind of picture that the stage makes. And as Carol was saying, that there has to be an audience to be played to.
Right. And that these things often reinforce the subject of the picture of the person being painted. And we see these in his fancy pieces as well, which are imaginative compositions, which in our thesis of the show is that these types of pictures that are really not thought about very much and there's really no scholarship on them per se are things that feed his portraiture. So his oeuvre is a lot larger than most people think. It's not just portraits. It's also these subject pictures which have a literary background to them, which again feeds into the theater. So his mind is sort of working on these these different themes that have to do with, you know, life.
Well, what would you contend that he got out of this branching off into these fancy pieces? Was it a chance for him to engage his imagination in a way that perhaps some of the more standard portraiture was not?
No, that's certainly one thing. But he also – it was a financial issue because he had them on exhibit at a gallery with Sully and Earle's Gallery in Philadelphia, which was a commercial gallery that he was a partner in. These fancy pieces then sometimes were engraved, so they got into the popular literature of the day, which spread his name. And William, as you've discussed in your essay, the technical parts were critical with fancy pieces.
He uses them to experiment with different processes at times, different types of varnish layers, different ways of preparing the ground, which, of course, it makes sense. You really can't do that with a commissioned portrait because you might run the risk of displeasing a patron. Carol and I were fascinated to discover that Sully is a case study of what it meant to be a working artist in the 19th century. He keeps meticulous records financially of what he makes, how much he values it at, when he starts it, when he finishes it, when he's paid for it. And we learned that he isn't always paid on time.
Or if he's not paid for it.
Exactly.
And how much it cost even though he wasn't paid for it.
And so the subject pictures, the fancy pictures, a lot of the time, as Carol just said, they're done on spec. He's trying to create scenes to keep his brand in front of the public and to make money either through admission to a gallery or through the rights to have it engraved,
right,
or actually also then to sell the actual work to a collector. It's a fascinating story for us to learn what it meant to, for nearly 70 years, make a living as an artist, and we know that that living was not always easy for him.
And also to be a contemporary artist. For example, the Little Nell, Asleep in the Old Curiosity Shop, which is a subject from Dickens, was painted just as Dickens is arriving in America on his tour of America. So he was like sort of the moment. You know, this is a picture people are going to want to see because everyone's reading this. The stories have just been finished, and here is the great British author. So he was always keyed into what was happening around him, you know. He was not sort of pulled back away from popular culture.
And maybe comparisons are unfair because these people are always of their time, but is there a modern day comparison to be made to someone like a Richard Avedon or a photographer who works in that kind of celebrity?
Well, honestly, the artist who just popped into my head, and it's, I can't believe I'm thinking about this, Jeff Koons. But Jeff Koons, even though his work is radically different from Thomas Sully's, is someone who from day one has always paid attention to the business of being an artist. His background actually was in business and finance before he became an artist full time. He's always followed the market. He's always paid attention to it and respected it. And Sully has similarly that same respect. Sully's not creating wonderful cast aluminum balloon animals, and Koons is not a portraitist. But he's one of the contemporary artists who has always made no secret of the fact that to be a successful artist means that one has to care about the market and has to care about money. I think Avedon is a lovely comparison as a portraitist.
Yeah. Yeah, but also talking about respecting the market, I sort of like that word because it doesn't mean you're giving into something. It means you understand where you're working, what the parameters are around you. And, you know, you don't want to turn someone into someone who's just sort of a slave to this. You know, it's not distorting his creativity.
Right. And I think I was joking around yesterday, but I do believe this. Thinking of the works that Sully painted, the subject pictures that deal with literature, whether it's a bestseller like Dickens or whether he's looking at a fairy tale, he's trying to find something. He has his finger on the pulse of pop culture. If Sully were painting today, I guarantee you he would have attempted a tasteful version of 50 Shades of Grey, of that trilogy, of whatever people are reading,
right.
Eat, Pray, Love, who knows? Sully would have painted a scene from it and made it as dramatic and beautiful as he knew how.
Yeah. Well, was there a certain status that went into being the subject of one of Sully's paintings? I mean, was that one of the things that the celebrities that he depicted got out of posing?
Well, I think there was a sort of glamour to his work. I mean, he particularly did that. It was based on a very glamorous British tradition of portraiture. And so people, they did seek him out to be rendered in the best possible way. But they're also very artful works. So, you know, you can hang on the wall and you can look as good as you can possibly look, but you're also you turn out as a beautiful picture, So you're getting a lot. But yeah, they are stylish. They are truly stylish.
By later in his life, photography was actually on the scene and being used for many of the same subjects that Sully painted. And in fact, there is a picture of Sully himself in book. Did photography, as it was entering the scene, shape the direction of his later work?
Sully, very late in life, made a handful of portraits that were based upon photographs. And in particular, there was a series of works – we don't have them in the exhibition – that were done for the Colonization Society out of Philadelphia that was involved with the colonization of Liberia. And the models weren't available for whatever reason, so he actually used photographic portraits to work these up. Now, they're interesting objects. We didn't include them in the show because for us that wasn't really Sully. That was Sully using technology to make the best of a situation.
Right. Earlier, he could have used an engraving, for example, if someone wanted a certain, you know, image of someone. So it's really just another technology. And you can usually see that they're based on photographs because his style was not really conducive to reproducing a photograph. It's a looser, more active style.
So in other words, to piggyback on what Carol is saying, often when artists – you see 19th century portraits that are based on photographs, there's a rigidity, there's a fixed expression, there's a sort of coldness and the finish is very precise, which is all about the fact that they're using this long exposure material. And Sully, as Carol said, it's flashy brushwork. It's the idea of movement and vitality and energy.
Performing brushwork,
exactly.
As you say.
So it just was incompatible with the way that he knew how to work.
It sounds like the ideal for him would have been to be able to essentially reanimate a photograph.
Yes. What an interesting idea. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. I love that. That's great.
Sully painted presidents as well as theater people and others. And I wonder that – I'm sure they wouldn't have used this term in those days. But was Sully sensitive to the idea of the spin that a politician would want to get out of how he was being depicted?
Well, the Jackson portrait that we have in the exhibition, of course, is on the $20 bill. It's a wonderful image and it's, you know, his hair is sort of flying off and he looks like this very, you know, hero of New Orleans.
He's a dashing guy.
It's a dashing guy. And he did dashing extremely well.
Sully knew a lot of presidents. He painted Thomas Jefferson from life. He painted Jackson numerous times. And I think he was very aware of trying to get the character of someone out. The head of Jackson that we have in the show, it's as if everything is distilled down to the forceful personality that comes through just this bust. But he would not have been the kind of artist who would have come to a portrait of a president with the idea of this is how someone looks presidential. It's more about finding the inner quality of the individual president and bringing it out.
Like an actor. Projects.
Exactly. So irascible Jackson, who has this great personality and is fiery and has been a military hero, that sort of authority and vigor and personality is what Sully brings out rather than here is a stately sort of way. When one sees portraits often, even today, of bank presidents and university presidents, and it's as if it doesn't matter what the person is like because the authority, the role is what's imposed upon them. Sully is absolutely the opposite of that.
Yeah.
The celebrities that are depicted, the presidents excepted, the celebrities are generally not well known to many of us today. So what do you hope that we get from this retrospective of Thomas Sully's career in 2013 as people take a look at his career in its entirety?
Well, I think that's interesting because, you know, it does – because he painted many famous people and many eminent people, these introduce them to the public. I also think because we're doing both portraits and these fancy pictures or these subject pictures that we're introducing that – to the public too, as part of the environment that Sully inhabited, what his world was like, because these were things he experienced, the literature of the day, these sort of emotions that are expressed in the literature, the fears about children that come out in his paintings, children in danger. We have a whole room of about children in danger and the way parents were feeling about, you know, the children being vulnerable at that time. So there are a lot of social issues that feed in that you don't necessarily think of in terms of Thomas Sully or of a 19th century portrait painter. So I think there's a sort of, you know, ground of material here which could be interesting to people and relevant to people.
Sully's audience would have known who these actors and actresses were. They were the stars of the day. We've lost a lot of those reputations. But then again, I would like to think that 100 and some years later, someone will look at a photograph of Kim Kardashian and say, well, who was that, that woman who's always photographed with her chin down, sort of looking down this way? Or you know, who was this Lindsay Lohan or Miley Cyrus person? So what we do through the catalog, through the labels, through the audio tour, we try to recuperate some of these identities for people and explain who they were and why they were famous. So we hope that if you do history that little lesson. Bit of homework, you get a sense of biography and history.
Social history.
And are reminded that people are people then as now.
Well, thank you to both of you. Best of luck with the exhibition, and I hope it turns into a huge success.
Thank you so much.
William Rudolph is curator of American art and decorative arts and director of exhibitions at the Milwaukee Art Museum. And Carol Eaton Soltis is project associate curator of American art at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. They are curators of the exhibition Thomas Sully Painted Performance, which is open through early January at the Milwaukee Art Museum. You'll find a link to more about it from wuwm.com/likeeffect. One last break, and then we'll learn about some compost fanatics hard at work in Milwaukee. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.